Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
Good morning. Welcome in. It's Fantasy Sports Today. Craig Bish along with Joe Pizzapia talking fantasy sports, reality sports right here exclusively on the Sports Grid Network. Follow Joe on Twitter at JoePizzapia17. Follow me on Twitter at Craig Bish. Follow us on Twitter at Sports Grid as we close in on the middle of the week. Joe, how's your week been going so far?
Pretty busy. I mean, I know everyone says they're bored at home. I am not. I need a break. It's been a long day, but a good one. We got another Diamond Bet show in the can, talking a lot of great baseball stuff. So that's been fun. The Black Book is slowly coming together. All the pieces of the puzzle, everyone's starting to submit their pages to me. So that's very exciting, too. And I got to talk a little NFL with my good friends at 5 Yard Rush this afternoon over there in UK. They are super bummed about no NFL games out there or MLB games out there either this year, but they're going very strong as well. So it's been a very busy and productive day. How about you, Craig Mish? What are you up to on this fine day?
Well, it seems like the same thing every single day. Doing the show, playing outside, staring at walls, eating lunch, exercising. It's like this routine that I have every single day is pretty much the same.
Are you a creature of habit, generally speaking?
Not necessarily. No, I don't think so. Not necessarily. But in during this, yes. The last few weeks I've been.
So you find the structure to be helping you, basically.
Basically, every day my son wakes up first because he's got the early class online at 9 a.m.
Right.
And so I'll wake up with him, get him on there. He does the class from 9 to 10 a.m. is the first one. And by that time, my daughter and my wife are up too. And my daughter's on her class, and my son does his class. Then after that's done, he takes a break, has a snack. He goes back for his second class, which is about 10:30 to 11. And then he has another class from 11:30 to about 12:30. And so
that's very interesting how they're doing it. So they're breaking it up in actual classes. See, my kids get all their work, and then they figure out what order they want to do what and how they want to do it, basically. So, and I've got a fourth grader and a second grader. I don't know
what's better or worse, but I can tell you that the first couple of weeks were not good because, listen, for my daughter, she's self-sufficient because she's older already, so she just gets the work done. She knows when it's due. But for my son, who's 7, he would get the work, and then these Zooms would be over, and then he'd be like, all right, let's go play. And so this was going on for like 2 weeks until I guess a lot of the parents said, hey, like we need to, first of all, now the teachers, they stay on the Zoom call even after it's over for help. That's number one. And number two, at the end of each of these calls, they now say, hey, now when you're done, it's not time to play. You got to get your work done that I've given you, you know. So that's the biggest difference is that that part of it. You know, all that work is normally right. done at school. Now it's being done at home. But my son is into that groove there. But usually around the time that he does the mid-morning class is when I take, at that point, I break free and I'll take my time at that point. So then I'll jump in on the show, obviously, and do the show from 11 to 1. After that, it is a strict 1 hour every single day treadmill exercise. Then what I'll do is go out and see if there's mail. I'll just go get the mail in my car, come back. Once a week going shopping for food now. It's about once. It was zero in the first month. Now it's about once a week going shopping for food. Mm-hmm. And then my wife around 4:30, starts dinner. 5:30, we're eating. 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, everyone's taking a bath, taking a shower. 8 o'clock, it's some, game time, and then 9 o'clock.
And then that's Ned it. Ryerson's there waiting for you outside every day. It's the same.
Needlehead Ned.
Yeah. I know they were talking.
I think it's important for this time to have that. I would say that the creature of habit is only based around me making sure that I get a workout in. Like I used to not really care. I used to be an intense workout person, and then I just completely stopped, and for about a year, I felt like crap, and then since then, it's just, if I miss a day, I get upset with myself, and so I double down on the next day. That's the one thing now that I had to change, and going to doctor's appointments and seeing different doctors, they always ask that question, and I always felt so guilty when I wasn't doing it, so I've recommitted myself to...
Do you have the same thing at the dentist when they ask you if you floss every day? Do you floss every day?
I lie.
You lie. Everyone lies. No one flosses every day.
I lie.
If they do, they're neurotic. No one flosses every day. Everyone's like, yeah, I floss. And they know. They know. That's why they give you free floss.
I 100% lie.
Yeah, like, come on. Lie. Get on there. Look, it's free. And you still don't. You floss like the next day and then another one. And then you get something in your teeth a week later. And then, then the whole thing just dies.
Right. So the things that I used to keep for myself every single day was... After this show was over, I would go pick up my kids from school. My wife would usually do the drop-off, and then I would do the pickup because of the time of the show from 11 to 1.
Right.
So that was the one part of the regimen that I do miss that I was pretty strict about, is that as soon as the show was over, I would get in my car, and I would immediately go and eat lunch somewhere. I'd pick a different place each day just to change it up, but I'd always leave right at 1 o'clock. So I'd drive either to a sub shop or... it just different places around or right around where my kid's school was. And then I would, eat, get in my car and then go on the car line and wait for the kids. But at that time was like my 1 hour chill moment sitting on that car. I'd listen to the radio, catch up on everything going on during football. I was looking at the spreads and the lines and everything else. That's the one thing, that little part of the freedom that I do miss. That's, not leaving at all is that's a hard part of this. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I think everyone has their things that they need right now. It's tough. I mean, sometimes it's tough to even stick to a regimen right now. It's certain things, too, I think. But everyone's got their stuff. Everyone's got their time. You need your me time, Craig Mish. Hopefully you'll get more of that back here in the weeks and months to come. Hopefully we all do as well. But look, in the meantime,
I don't
have to
see
do the
that
stuff
happening,
we can do.
By the way.
What? Getting your me time back?
Well, first of all, I don't need any more than I'm already getting. I'm good with that. But I just don't think that we're going to see a crazy change in the world for the next 2 or 3 months. I think that there's no, last night we got our email from the camps that there's no camps in June. So, it's basically now down to July or nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't, but kids would do the half day camps or things like that, or like a week of camp, like a dance camp for half a day or something like that. I look at that with my kids where it says, hey, it's the summertime. You've worked hard all year. You deserve a break, too. I like to give them the break. I understand it's not easy for every parent to do that. It's very difficult. They need someone to be with the kids when they're not around. So I'm very lucky in that respect. But, the kids need a break, too. It's definitely been a time of challenge. But it's been a really good time here at the Pisa Pia house. We've had a pretty good time here. So I'm actually grateful for it. I've been looking on the brighter side of stuff. And... there's certainly a lot of other people. It's like Twitter is going to be working from home potentially for the foreseeable future, too.
Yeah, let's get into that a little bit, Joe. I think that that's really interesting because, we're at the point now here where everyone is kind of taking this on. And I think that in the case of Twitter, too, the employees essentially, I think that they can handle everything from their house. Like, I never thought that we'd be able to broadcast our whole entire network from our houses, but everybody else is doing it, too. So why not Twitter?
Yeah, and it certainly does make sense to at least have the infrastructure in place to do this. Actually, I read a fascinating article, too, about Governor Cuomo in New York talking with Bill Gates about a lot more virtual classroom things and, you know, the idea of these buildings and whatnot. And, you know, you're keeping all these buildings and running the millions of dollars we spend. But if children can learn in different facets, maybe it's time to start looking at different ways. And I'll tell you what, that's an interesting conversation to have, because I don't know about you, but, you know, school is partially, for those kids who don't homeschool, school is a lot more about learning your social things and understanding all the pitfalls and the positives and the negatives and going through all those wacky things that you go through in middle school and high school. That kind of shapes who you are. And I wonder, you know, the kids who don't really have as much of that, you know, how that affects them later on. I know some kids probably it doesn't affect them at all. Others, maybe it does. But I think it's fascinating to at least look into the options as children get older of being able to do more things from home or in their own environments. Were you somebody who worked better in a group, or somebody who was better when you just left your own devices?
I've been doing my own thing for a long time, so I don't know. I don't really remember working with a group.
I prefer being on my own for the most part. I like to collaborate, but I like to, like, bring my part of the collaboration. That's like the acting part in me, too. You know, as the actor, you work on everything, and then you bring it to then work with other people. Same thing with the Black Book. I work on my stuff, and everybody else brings their things, and we all collaborate together. But I kind of cherish that crafted home kind of thing, and then kind of bring your work in, as opposed to, I hated the group project, because there was that one kid who didn't do anything. There was that one kid who wanted to do everything, or at least tell you how to do it. The group projects were annoying. I hated those in school.
I know that guy. He's working for us on the Purple Book.
Yeah, that guy. That guy's a jerk. Nobody likes him.
Yeah, I think that working at television stations and radio stations for many years, I think that was probably the closest that I would come to collaborating in media. I mean, I worked at a yogurt shop, TCBY. I collaborated putting the yogurt in the machines when I was 18 years old. I think that counts too. But I think I could go either way. I think I don't really, you know, I really don't, at this stage of where I'm at, I really don't mind leading. I don't mind following. I don't mind working together. Whatever it is to put the best thing out, that's pretty much what I'll do. Now, I think that of all the things that I've been involved in, TV, radio, anything wise, I think I'll have probably a strong opinion on different things. And so that would make a collaboration a little bit more difficult with people who don't agree with me. But in the end, the one trait that I know that I do have as it pertains to anything is that I will do whatever it is that's what's best for a show, anything. Like, I understand that it is about a team and you have to do things in order to make the team work. It's not a one-man type deal. So however anything needs to happen, I'm usually the first one to say, hey, I'll do this to make this happen, or I'll do this to make that better. So that's
why you wear the C. Like, that's why you wear the C, Craig. It's not for Craig. It's for Captain. A lot of people think it's just for Craig. Not true. It's
my for Derek Captain. My Derek Jeter cap is B.
Do you also send those baskets out the next day, too, like Derek Jeter used to?
We don't talk about that here, Joe. That's not something that we do on this show.
You know, a nice edible arrangement, an NDA. I mean, you know, that's a perfect way to send people off, I think.
He's well aware of those jokes, by the way.
You know what? They're funny. I don't care if you're Derek Jeter. They're funny.
He's not that sensitive like that.
I wouldn't imagine he is. I imagine he has a much better sense.
He's a lot like Michael Jordan. In that sense.
Right. If you could ever strip everything away and get him to just tell you the truth about, you know what?
Just, I want to win and that's it. Nothing.
That's
else.
Another one too.
Says about me.
You know what? We talked about who you'd like to see in movies. If they did a 10-part one on that Yankee dynasty and Jeter opened up and was dropping F-bombs the way Jordan did in this last chance, that I can get behind, man. That could be really cool to see a whole different side of DJ. That would be very fun.
I would tell you that since he's taken over as the CEO of the Marlins, and I think that, like a lot of other people have said, I put myself in that same category, that once he knows your name, you've kind of crossed like a different barrier with him. And I've crossed that barrier. So I've had a chance to talk to him privately about different things. And I could tell you that there is so much misconception about his perception, absolutely. what they think that he must think about. I mean, he literally... this guy does never get like, oh, Jeter must be mad. This guy never gets mad. He never gets angry. But it's people just rip him for nothing all the time. We'll be right back on Fantasy Sports Today with our fantasy birthdays right after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. It is time for This Day in Fantasy Sports, and it's time to blow out the candles from a social distancing point of view. I guess you do that like this now with the candles. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, do they just hand you a candle? You have to hold a candle?
I guess so.
The whole thing now?
I had my birthday last month. We did it here in the house, but I don't know how it is to be outside. I'm just not sure.
It is kind of a funny thing to think about, like that for years and years we all just – you know, whoever's birthday it was just got to blow their germs all over the food that you're all going to eat. Kind of interesting when you think about it. Not sure where that tradition came from. I know where the cheers tradition came from, which was, you know that one, right? You understand why people toast and cheers like that?
Tell us, Joe.
I will tell you, Craig Mish. It's because when you clang the glasses, it's to make sure that nobody had poisoned anybody so that all the drinks would mesh into the other beers. So you'd all do it together. You're supposed to hit them hard so they all would cross over into everyone else's drink, and then everyone would drink. So if somebody was poisoned, you're all going down. That's where it all came from. See that? You learn things on Fantasy Sports Today.
All right. So very good. That's where we're at. Well, this is time for This Day in Fantasy Sports for May the 13th, 2020. Let's get started with Stan the Man. Stan Musial is the eighth Major League Baseball player to get to 3,000 hits. Joe, does 3,000 hits still mean a lot these days? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I think 3,000 hits means a ton. I mean, it's going to be harder to come by because a lot of players don't have to play that long, and a lot of players have other things ahead of them, especially making a lot more money. They're set for life at a way earlier age. But on top of which, I just don't know at this point how important it is milestone-wise for a lot of guys. I think nowadays it's about getting to the major leagues, getting paid, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I think there was a different feel to the craft back then of what level you wanted to be, and some guys still have that. I think the Mike Trouts of the world still have that. I think there's a handful of guys that still have that kind of pride. I think they all have a certain level of pride, but to hang on long enough to do 3,000, That's a big number there for Musial. And you look at Sam Musial, too. This is a guy who had a phenomenal career but never hit 40 home runs in a season. However, we're talking about, you know, years where he'd have 228 hits, 230 hits, was somewhere always around 30 home runs, was just so consistent to be a career 331 hitter and a career 976 OPS over 22 years. That's including, you know, some down years at the end. But, I mean, down for him was 255 in his very last year when he's 42 years old. Stan the Man had an incredible career for sure, and obviously an iconic Cardinal. And you know what? Should I get – you know, he does get talked about in those legendary players, but he's never quite in that same breath as the Mazes and Ruths and guys like that. He's always kind of in that next tier. And I think that's because he never had that prolific 50 home run season or something like that. Home runs, you know, chicks dig the long ball. So at the end of the day, I think that's what happens.
Yeah, it could be. You're right. He doesn't get mentioned a lot in those conversations. All right, 1967, Mickey Mantle hits his 500th home run. Must be milestone day off Baltimore Orioles. Stu Miller. There are a lot of people who still covet all of Mickey Mantle's home runs. I believe he hit a couple of 560-foot home runs that were officially tracked. It's still hard to get my arms around that one. A couple times he did it.
Mickey Mantle was a special talent. In fact, talked about him a lot coming up on Diamond Bets on Sunday because it's our center field action spectacular. And digging into Mickey Mantle's peak, this is a guy that had those 52 home runs, 130 RBI seasons. And, you know, we also look at Mickey Mantle of what if he hadn't hurt that knee on the sprinkler and maybe his career could have been even better. Also a guy that wrestled with his own personal demons as well. And, you know, father died young, uncles died young, grandfather died young. He thought he was on that same path. And as he famously said later in his career or in his life, he says, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself. He would have been on the Craig Mish program, the exercising every day, the taking good care of himself. That's what it's all about. But Mickey Mantle, I mean, iconic baseball New York figure. And to think that you could pass the torch from DiMaggio in center field to Mickey Mantle in center field, that is an incredible thing to consider. This was a guy that was just, he was the guy. And quintessential 1950s Americana baseball in New York, it's Mickey Mantle. And yeah, it's Willie, Mickey, and the Duke. But Mickey Mantle, I always feel like, is kind of in the New York area, at least, that god among men. He's that legendary guy, and I'd love to hear more of those stories about those guys and what they did. Him and Billy Martin out in the town must have been pretty fun.
Yeah, that's the one of the few that I did not ever have a chance to meet that I have regret. In fact, I went to a card show one time, and I believe he was there, but I never went up to him. I don't remember the scenario of what it was, but he is on my short list of unfortunate people that I never had a chance to meet over the course.
He sounds like it would have been a fun one. I mean, if you can get him to really tell you a couple stories or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have that experience. 1983, Reggie Jackson is the first Major League Baseball player to strike out 2,000 times. I think Reggie Jackson was sort of like a pioneer, Joe, of just hitting the home run or striking out. He's kind of like how everybody else is right now.
Yeah, it's funny. He's paved the way, right? The all or nothing guy. And we've had a lot more of those guys in that era. Dave Kingman comes to mind as another all-or-nothing slugger in the late 70s, early 80s. But Reggie was probably the most spectacular at it, and he hit a lot of home runs, so I guess it worked out for him. He's in the Hall of Fame. But, yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, there's going to be a lot more guys that hit that mark. I wonder how many guys actually have that mark nowadays, because it seems like a lot easier to reach 2,000 strikeouts in a 15-year career than it was back in the 60s and 70s. You look at some of those Joe DiMaggio seasons where he struck out like 25 times in the season or something like that, where you can't even wrap your mind around that. 25 times, that's like a month for, you know, some of these guys, or 2 weeks for some more of them. But when I say Reggie Jackson to you, do you always think of him as an A, or do you think of him as a Yankee? Because Brett, our producer, and I were having this conversation.
Yeah.
Even though he won more titles with the A's.
Yeah, but I grew up as him being one of my favorite players. So
Fair enough. I don't think that A's team gets enough credit for that run that they had. They're kind of, you know, the Big Red Machine kind of took over the mantle in the 70s. But, you know, the A's teams were just as dominant for the first part of that decade.
Yeah, I'm scared to get up because it'll ruin the look of the show. But I have like an oversized ticket, like a 2-foot ticket of the 78 World Series signed by Reggie Jackson in my office. So
I love that everything is within arm's reach.
Like, you name something,
I feel like you look at the background, everything looks sunny and wide open, but really all around Craig Mish, it's like hoarders. It's like this incredible weird thing where all these boxes are piled up and all these things, and at any moment he could just reach and pull something out. I love it.
You name it, I probably have it. 1999, Allen Iverson set an NBA playoff record with 10 steals in a 97-85 win. And the answer, not only a good offensive player, but a really good defensive player as well. And he's been brought up a lot recently, of course, because of Michael Jordan and everything else. Okay, over to fantasy sports birthdays. So here they are for May the 13th, 2020. We'll lead off with Bobby Valentine, and a really good manager for a long period of time. Fun guy to talk to as well. He's been posting some fun videos also during the pandemic. Of course, he's known as being a great Mets manager, but of course, you know, Joe was in a lot of other places too, Texas, and then at the end, Boston. Nobody wants to talk about that one.
No, Boston didn't go very well for him. He did have the awesome white hair by that point, which is pretty cool. But, you know, Bobby Valentine, he did have a good run with the Mets, but I'll always think of the mustache. I'll always think of him getting thrown out, coming back with the eye black, the fake mustache, changing the shirt, dark glasses. You're supposed to be the leader of the team, the manager, the adult in the room, And I don't think that was a very adult moment. I don't know, Craig. I mean, could you imagine a Major League Baseball manager right now doing that? I don't know if I can. I feel like they would get fired immediately. Somehow Bobby Valentine got away with it. I'm not sure how.
It was fun. It was a big moment for baseball, him sitting on that bench like that. But unfortunately, he's either love him or you hate him type guy. There's a lot of people who didn't like him, too.
I think I respect him as a baseball man, too. And this was another dude also that was a very talented player who also had an early career injury that kind of unfortunately derailed what was a very promising career when he came up with the Dodgers, I believe, if memory serves.
That's correct. 1961, Dennis Rodman was born. And, of course, his name is out there a lot with The Last Dance being on all the time. I've told my story about him asking me to wash his car many times. 1978, Barry Zito.
Yeah, fun facts about Barry Zito. The guy got absolutely paid by the San Francisco Giants, a huge contract. I don't know if he was ever quite worth that amount of money. No. Also, Barry Zito, the guy that picked the number 75 because he thought it looked good that his name looked like it was on a shelf. It's a real quote from Barry Zito. That's why he wore 75. So there you go. And yeah, you think of the Hudson, Mulder, Zito era, and you think of all the genius of Billy Bean and Moneyball and all this stuff. But it's funny how you can look like a genius when you have three absolute horses in the front of a rotation and never really win anything else without that kind of pitching around you. So I always kind of found that to be a bit of a fallacy of the genius of the Oakland A's. Yeah, it was something about on-base percentage. Yeah, that's a good thing. It's something you can work tours and walking more and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you have three aces in their prime. You're going to win a lot of games too.
Yep. All right. Closing out the birthdays, we have Mike Bibby, born in 1978. Really good, underrated NBA player for a long time. And Tyrann Mathieu, born in 1992. And that closes out our birthdays. Any thoughts on the career of Bibby or the still
going,
blossoming career?
Yeah,
of Mathieu, who's really, I mean, look, he was kind of discarded and really ended up having a good year last year.
He was. This was a guy that really turned his life around, too, with Bruce Arians and the Cardinals. So good story there. I like the good stories. It's never too late, obviously, to turn things around. And he had a ton of talent, and luckily he was able to find himself in time before things got away from him, before he lose a career. You know, we're going back a second, too, to 1999, talking about Allen Iverson. I feel like Allen Iverson was also the beginning of a new era in the NBA where it started to become a little bit more about the one-on-one isolation game. I feel like Allen Iverson started that movement almost in a way. Do you kind of get where I'm going, where, you know, it's a lot more passing and things like that in the NBA, and I feel like the Allen Iverson kind of marked that age of all of a sudden you were isolating guys and just letting Allen Iverson go one-on-one with a guy because you would always be able to get a shot off or get a move on him or break free. And I felt like that's kind of that earmark of where the game started to, again, evolve into more of what we have now.
It's an interesting thought. I never really thought of it that way. But at the time that Iverson came into the league, there's no doubt, like, he was that crossover dribble that he had really changed everything. And so I think that that's, interesting point. Also, part of it is the NBA has changed so much in terms of the amount of points that are scored. And Iverson was part of that new era of where, any time in the NBA now, games aren't 87, 82 anymore. Every single game is 110 to 105, 120 to 110.
Right.
The NBA totals, if you're going to bet on them, are somewhere in the 230s, 240s. That's just, people just don't even talk about that.
No. Because you see some of those scores when you're watching The Last Dance, some of those games sometimes is like 88 to 85. You know, that's a third quarter. That's a third quarter game right now in modern day NBA. That's where you're leaving. You're like, oh, good. Must be the beginning of the fourth if that's the score. But you're right. It's the lack of defense. It's the fact also everybody's very three-point happy nowadays. I mean, I was before.
Listen, the points pay the bills. I mean, James
points
Harden,
pay the bills.
MVPs, points. I mean, this is.
But does defense still win championships? I guess that's the question.
Not on the Warriors didn't, so.
No, but then again, the Warriors had pretty much every good player in the NBA at one time, so that also helps.
All right, we'll take a quick time out on Fantasy Sports today. We got plenty more to come here on the show a little bit later. What we're going to do is dive into some Major League Baseball discussion and maybe pick some players that could be potential National League designated hitters from the NL East. So stay tuned for that. More Sports Grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. It is Craig Mish along with Joe Pizzapia as we have no baseball yet. We're getting closer and closer, I believe, to having a season. So for now, we're taking a look at some of the historical seasons in the history of baseball and the history of fantasy baseball. And of course, 2010, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was 2010, I believe, was the first year I hosted my own fantasy baseball show on satellite radio. I think that was the first year that it happened. And I'll never forget, at the time, I had to go to a studio to do those shows, didn't have the technology to be able to do it. It was called ISDN, was the technology. Mm-hmm. I used to go to a studio. Me and Cliff Floyd would be together. He just retired the year before, and I'm teaching him how to play fantasy baseball, and we're going over these guys and Carl Crawford. I'm like, is he still going to be good in Boston, wherever he went? Oh, yeah, he'll be fine. Like, I had Torrey Hunter. Like, I remember having these discussions and him calling these guys personally. And I had some relationships, but of course not like him. So he's, you know, literally tapping into all of this information. Right. And that was the beginning of that. I can't say that. I mean, I feel like fantasy baseball is more popular now than it ever has been, and the NFBC data would show that because more people are playing. But I would say that the nine-year run that I had doing that, it was more or less growing and growing and growing to the point where I think that even though baseball's popularity isn't what it once was maybe 20, 30 years ago, I still feel like the same amount of people are playing the game.
Well, I think high stakes has certainly grown in the baseball world, too. I think that's an offshoot of people who've played for so long and the confidence level that a lot of them have. But again, you know, when you look at the fantasy pie, you know, look at book sales, for instance, things like that. NFL is just such a dominant force over everything. But I wanted to take a look back 10 years ago. I didn't realize that's when you had started there. I remember us trying to get 10. On that same channel, myself and my podcast partner at the time, Dan Stratford. And we were, you know, hey, we got a podcast. We'd love to come on. We'll take any time slot. I know you're starting this channel. We want to be a part of it. Eventually, I did work my way in there, and I ended up working with you. And it's funny, here we are, 10 years later, it's a crazy road. But
I want to say 2010 was the first year that I did it.
It's in February. I definitely think it was 2010. I because I remember when we knew that channel was happening. Like, I remember it was around 09 to 2010 when we knew that.
And by the way, the first show, little known fact, the first show and the first shows that I did on that channel were all football. Before I did baseball.
No, look at that. But 2010, the top draft pick in Major League Baseball was Bryce Harper. And still in his prime years, just signed a huge contract a couple years ago with Philadelphia. And obviously embracing the city. The city's embracing him. I think good things are going to come for that Phillies team. The MVPs that year. These guys still, well, one of them still playing in the Major Leagues. Bryce Harper obviously still is. But Joey Votto still hanging on. Not quite Joey Votto of old, obviously, but 2010 was a very good year for Joey Votto. 36 home runs for him. 37, 113 RBI, 16 stolen bases. He had a 424 OBP and 1,024 OPS. And, of course, we can't forget about the year Josh Hamilton had as American League MVP. Now, Josh Hamilton's been a story of redemption and then falling backwards time and time again. And right. It's funny when we think about the career of Josh Hamilton, you think of moments of peak, like 2010 when he wins the MVP. You think about the Yankee Stadium moment in the home run derby, all of those. And then you think about all the other negatives and the recent negatives too for him. But 2010, obviously hit 359 that year and with a 633 slugging. That pretty much tells you all you need to know about that. So again, I feel like the Josh Hamilton story went from being a feel good one to a not so feel good one. And here we are, you know, at this point, how different 10 years can really shape your opinion of someone.
Yeah, Hamilton, I'll always remember the home run derby and being there at Yankee Stadium. I was there and I remember watching it thinking I'll never see anything like this ever again. And I don't think that we will. And look, other players have hit more home runs throughout the home run derby. But the show that he put on, just home run after home run, was amazing. In terms of Votto, you know, it's a bad job by me by not researching this before the show. But Votto's got to be the longest tenured player on one team in Major League Baseball, right?
Ooh, on one team, I think you're right. I don't think of anybody right now that's still on the same team that's played that long.
Yadi or Molina, maybe?
Maybe Yadi. Maybe. That's a good one. We might have to check that out. But yeah. Maybe on the break we'll check it out. Or maybe our producer will be able to tell us that. But
those are the only two names that I really can.
2010, a lot of it was called the year of the pitcher. Six no-hitters were thrown in 2010 by Ubaldo Jimenez, which I remember that one very well. That was the year of Ubaldo. One of the first pieces I ever wrote, actually, on Fantasy for his site was about Ubaldo Jimenez, Dallas Braden, of course, the famous Mother's Day no-hitter that he threw. Roy Halladay threw a no-hitter on May 29th. That's right. Edwin Jackson, Matt Garza, there's a name from the past. Those were your no-hitters, the most ever in a single season. And also you had Armando Galarraga's near-perfect game.
I saw the highlight of that the other day.
Yeah, that was another one of those moments where what could have possibly been. Steven Strasburg, also of the Washington Nationals, struck out 41 batters in his first four major league starts. I don't ever remember a debut quite as electric as that one. There's been some really good ones.
It was.
But to me, I'll put my money there. Would you agree with that? That moment against the Pirates where he just looked like he was in another universe of everybody else, that was a very exciting debut.
It's true. And he really didn't live up to his potential fully until this past year, 10 years. I mean, that's really hard to believe.
And that's why I thought this was an interesting year to do, because you have that debut of Strasburg, and now this is his major one of the major paydays he'll ever have in his career this past year. But it took him 10 years to become that guy. He's only got a couple 200-inning seasons even. It's been a real up and down and kind of waiting and waiting. And it's taken a decade to get the best out of Steven Strasburg. It's fascinating.
By the way, in 10 days, I think I mentioned this probably on the show, but in 10 days, the ESPN 30 for 30 is going to debut the Roy Halladay one. I am telling you now, it's going to be as good or better than anything that we've seen.
Well, Roy Halladay.
His wife is an incredible talker. Incredible.
We've got some messages for Brett. Here's the longest tenured guys. Wainwright, Zimmerman, Pedroia, who's barely playing, and Molina. All of those guys are still pretty long.
Did Pedroia play last year? No, right?
No, he did not play. I don't think he got the field at all last year. If he did,
Molina's number one?
I believe that's what he's saying there. Okay. But Roy Halladay in 2010.
I forgot about Adam Wainwright.
Yeah, let's remember Roy Halladay winning 21 games in 2010. He led the National League in wins in the American League. It was CC Sabathia who just posted a picture on Twitter or Instagram. Do you see him? He's yoked. Look at CC. He's looking huge right now. Also, some guys there. Felix Hernandez, King Felix, led the league in ERA in the American League. Kevin Millwood lost 16 games. Jared Weaver led the league in strikeouts in the American League with 233.
How did that ever happen?
I don't know. I'm not sure of Jared Weaver, but here's another one. In the National League, Tim Lincecum leading the National League in strikeouts with 231. Lincecum, another one of these guys. There was a window here where he was must-see television. So much fun. Oh, he'll never last. All these things. Well, they were right. He didn't last. But my God, it was a really fun ride. I remember his no-hitter. I was on air live at SiriusXM broadcasting that night. While that game was going on, we were doing pitch-by-pitch, basically, as that was happening through the eighth and ninth inning. And I remember that was like his last shining moment. But Lincecum was there a hotter pitcher at the time than him? Because he was it. Him, Halliday, that was it right there.
Yeah, for 3 or 4 years, Lincecum was incredible and ended up winning, I believe, 2 World Series with the San Francisco Giants. And with the, you know, you and I both have, I'm a little taller, I think, than you, but with the height thing. But the thing that I'll always remember about certain players is when I'm sized up next to them and I'm as tall as them, and Lincecum is one of those guys.
Yeah,
Lincecum is one of those guys where I'll remember and go, oh, wow, you are as tall as me. You know, there's not many guys that I could say that about, too. Yeah. Surprisingly, people do not agree with me on this. And if one-on-one, he would admit it. But I am telling you that I am not much shorter than Alex Bregman.
I believe that. I 100% buy into that. Alex Bregman looks like a utility infielder until you watch him play. I mean, if I just saw him, I would think, oh, look, that's just, you know, just a jag.
He's 5'9". Maybe he's 5'9".
Well, I like that guys are dominating right now.
Yeah.
I like that. By the way, 2010 was peak Albert Pujols, too. This is a guy, he led the league in home runs, RBI, and runs scored that year. He just missed the Triple Crown. Carlos Gonzalez hit .336 that year, but obviously if not for Colorado, maybe it would have been a Triple Crown year for Albert Pujols. 42, 118, 115. Doesn't get much better than that. Also, 54 home runs in 2010 for one Jose Bautista, a guy who overplayed his hand, I think, in free agency 1 year, and unfortunately he never quite got the payday. Yeah, very kind of sad, but Jose Bautista at that time, also Mark Teixeira led the American League in runs scored. Miguel Cabrera had 126 RBI, and Ichiro, 214 hits yet again. And our boy Juan Pierre led the American League in stolen bases with 68. Could you imagine seeing 68 steals nowadays?
What team was Juan Pierre on? The White
Sox?
Juan
Pierre, Chicago White Sox, and in the National League, Michael Bourne with Houston, 52, led the league there. And 2010?
In the end, are we going to look back at our eras? Who will end up being the better player? Is it going to be Pujols or Miguel Cabrera? Who is it going to be?
That's an excellent question. I kind of put them as right there together because I think they were equally dominant. I think Pujols was the better defensive player. I will say that. I know Miguel Cabrera started out playing third base and, you know, dabbled in the outfield a little bit. But I think overall, Albert Pujols was more of an asset to his team at first base. But, I mean, I just think they're right there. I mean, the stats are so even with those two guys. One guy has more titles, though. It's Albert Pujols.
Yeah, I think Pujols will probably get a little bit of a nod, but it is very close. Individually, Cabrera has a triple crown.
He does. He does indeed. San Francisco Giants were the World Series champions that year. They beat the Texas Rangers. World Series MVP, Edgar Renteria. And this was the beginning of that every other year run of the odd and even years. So the even years of the Giants winning the World Series. This is kind of in the thick of that. So 2010, only 10 years ago, but in a way, it kind of seems like a lifetime, doesn't it?
It does.
When you think about that, I mean, Bryce Harper, number one overall pick, still in his prime. Everything else, it's kind of like, wow, it feels like so long ago to think about names like Jared Weaver and Kevin Millwood, for God's sakes.
Yeah, no, it's true. And especially hearing the pitchers, that's the most significant change that happens. Yeah.
Josh Johnson,
baseball.
Ryan Wilson, those were the kind of the guys that people were fighting over each other to have in fantasy leagues. And look, now, you know, not a lot of long careers here, except for Halliday and Sabathia. Those were kind of the two guys that we were talking about. But Lincecum didn't quite go as long as you hoped.
No.
You know, Sabathia had a
very
long
career.
Came
back a couple years ago, Lincecum. Got $1 million to make 8 starts in the minors. Never even saw a day of major league pitching.
But he was
had
fun
that
to work
out in cargo pants. Crazy.
He was fun to watch. That's all I know.
No question about it. He was for a handful of years, without a doubt. All right, coming up next, Joe and I get back into it. We've got some fantasy stuff, some reality stuff as well to get to. And also, we've got our season win totals. Today, we're going to dive into a couple of teams in the AFC South. That's coming up next right here on Sports Grid. Right here, you can watch us every day, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, as we catch you here on Sports Grid every day. Also coming up a little bit later, Scott Farrell, Coast to Coast. The show is live. We'll be back right after this.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
And welcome back to the show. Craig and Joe here with ya, as we learned recently that Tony Hawk is going to have all of his games back available on Xbox and potentially PlayStation. Were you ever a big skateboarder, Joe? You ever ride a skateboard?
No, I always thought it was going to be a death trap for me. And I'm a pretty good athlete, you know, but rode my bikes and all that stuff. But the skateboarding always looked... Never a skateboarder. I don't know why.
I was into it in the 80s, but I was not good at it at all, but I was a little bit into it.
Well, there was also like a weird stigma there too, where it was like the kids who skateboarded and hung out behind the drugstore, those kids and stuff like that. And I was a part of that group of kids. I did have some friends who were part of that group of kids, but like, I don't know. Skateboarding to me was just not something that I ever had the desire to see. Well, how much can I fly up in the air and then land on the concrete and hurt myself? I didn't see the point of that. Like, if I could flip my board over, I didn't realize that was such an impressive thing. I don't know. I just never got that. But did you ever have that thing? Did you ever want
to? I did. I had a skateboard. I did. Listen, first of all, again, I was horrible. But I had a skateboard. And I remember when I was younger, I took a trip to San Francisco, which at the time, they had a store there that was very popular. It was called Skates on Haight and Ashbury over there. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to the store, buying stickers, buying those little mini skateboards too. Christian Hosoi was one of my favorites at the time. Nobody even knows who that is. But then, because it's in San Francisco, I remember what I did was I got on my skateboard, and I wanted to. And because my family friends, who we always stay with, like live in the heart of the city in San Francisco, they still live there to this day. And so I got on my skateboard, and I'm like, this doesn't look so steep, you know? It's like at the top of their house. And I was just going and going and going, and I literally, like, had to jump off the skateboard and, like, roll around and go get the skateboard at the bottom of the hill. I thought to myself, wow, like, I am done. And I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah, the X Games I never thought were going to become the thing that they were.
They are.
They are. I mean, I think at one point they were even more popular than they are now. I could be wrong about that, but... Maybe it's just because it seems like there's so many other options. But I think there was a time in that late 90s where, and you know, the Tony Hawk era, where the X Games became just a phenomenon. You know, ESPN really capitalized and found alternative sports. As I like to call them, the Mountain Dew sports. You know, the extreme, right. You know, the different colors of Mountain Dew. And that's, you drink the Mountain Dew and then you get on the skateboard or the BMX bike and you do stuff. But yeah, and who would have thought that some of the X Games things would eventually become part of the Olympics, too, which were fascinating, not something that anybody thought that would ever happen, but it did. And Tony Hawk is, I think, the most iconic figure without anyone even talking about it. I wonder, is he kind of arguably the most, you know, when you're talking about somebody who just dominates a sport, I mean, he's kind of in that same realm of the all-time greats, like, of anything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't talk about him that way.
That's true. His name is synonymous with the sport. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's the entire sport for sure. But it also got me thinking, because right now is are you still playing Animal Crossing every night?
I'm playing the Animal if I get a chance.
I get a chance.
Well, you know, you said, Joe, can you come back on here? So the hour I used to have to myself, no, it's gone. Yeah, no, it doesn't exist anymore. But I'm happy to spend
it. What about
it with
8 o'clock
you
at night?
Oh, by that time I'm checked out. But you know, maybe I just finished. I did finally. No, I'm not. I'm not checked. But I will say this: I did finally finish Ozark season 3 last night. So that's what I did at 8 o'clock last night. So now I'm caught up on Ozark. Let me tell you, that's the way to end a year for a series. Let me tell you, that's
how.
Yeah,
I don't
want to
ruin it for anybody. But yeah,
no, but
really good.
That's
really
a heck of an ending right there.
Do you think it's the best drama type show that we've had in the last 5-10
years?
Well,
you know, I thought Game of Thrones had some elite level acting, but I don't think there's ever been a show that had such incredible episode to episode, complete character to character acting that you get. Like, you know, there's always hit and miss in different things. Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones is classical. It's a different kind of feeling with the language. In terms of modern contemporary acting, I think I would put Ozark. I think season 3, episode 9, last ones that I were watching last night, the scenes between the brother who's dealing with the mental illness, that guy and Laura Linney, the stuff going on, the work between the two of them as actors is just off the charts. It's like going to acting school for people. I mean, you can go there and you can learn so much about working with each other, but also how important emotional preparation is. And you got to realize, you know, people take for granted, just like on this show and other shows, things happen and you have to stop and then restart again. And you've got to do that same scene with that same emotion, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 10 times potentially. And then you got to turn and do it from different angles. So you get the pickups for the close-ups for Laura Linney's character and the close-ups for the other character and go back and forth. People don't understand how difficult film acting can be and how arduous, but a good director will set everybody up so they can only have to do that scene a couple times because it's so emotionally taxing. What do you think about, you know, they realize that that episode probably took days and days and days to shoot, right? Maybe even weeks to shoot. Imagine how many times and how many spots you had to like get up and gear up for that again. People don't realize how hard it is, but for my money, man, I think it's right up there with anything I've ever seen acting wise. It is so good. And one of my old teachers on it, who played the lawyer, my friend Janet McTeer, who was actually played Helen on the series, who I was so pleasantly surprised to see her. And if you notice, she is so enormously tall. There's a lot of scenes where she's actually someone's on a step talking to her. Or someone like walking behind her 2 feet. And that's a little tricks they do on camera. So people look like they're in the same status, but she is a good 6 foot plus. He's a very tall woman.
Well, I will say this. I don't want to ruin the show for anybody, but it's very unclear as to whether or not she will appear on the next episode.
All I'll say is this.
We're unsure. We'll just leave it at that.
This is one of these things. I will say this. I'm pretty sure that even if they ended the show and never did another one, I would be satisfied with the show. Like, I feel like they could have actually stopped the show and not do another season.
They could have. They really could have. That's how strong the
I know we've kind of gone down a rabbit hole, but it's a quality. I agree. Right now, you know.
So in terms of video games, like, besides Animal Crossing, is there anything during the last 30 days that you've gotten
South
back
Park.
Into
played? I've been playing the South Park game a little bit, okay. And I haven't played video games by myself in a decade. Like, when you have little kids, there's just no time, and you're working several jobs, and you're a single parent on top of that. There's no time for video games. The only time I would ever play Madden even is if, like, you know, I go to one of my friends' houses and they have teenagers, and we sit there. Oh yeah, all right, I'll play the 14-year-old in Madden, and I can still hold my own, but you know, they're just better at this point. They're just better. But it's been kind of weird. Like, video games are almost like my kind of release. There's been that South Park game. I told you it's called The Fractured Butthole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very funny game. Again, that's kind of like my speed. It's like, I don't want something too challenging. I want challenging enough that it keeps my interest, but at the same time challenges me enough that, you know, I want to keep playing it, but not something that's going to make me feel like I'm inferior as an old person playing video games. Do you play video games anymore?
Well, I play with my son on RBI Baseball on the Xbox.
Did you get the... did you go on eBay and look for the used?
No, we haven't done that yet.
No, well,
no, but I don't. I'll eventually get to. I may just end up caving and buying the old one. I don't know. Well, when is the new one coming out? I cannot figure this out.
It always comes out at Christmas. But I told you, you can buy. People are going to be unloading them if there's a whiff of the 5 coming out. People are going to be unloading the PS4 any minute now. You can get away with this. And look, there's no camps this year. It might have to turn to at some point MLB The Show for a couple hours here and there.
But the other thing that I have is I have there's a company called Arcade 1-Up. Mm-hmm. It came out about a year ago with the 3/4 size, full video games. So we bought Galaga and we bought Pac-Man.
Oh,
so
I know those. Yeah. I like those. That's fun. Oh, yeah. The Switch actually for Nintendo has a thing where you can play some of the old video games, the old original Nintendo. But it's weird. Like, you have a service and every month they pop new ones on there. But you know what kind of stinks is what's frustrating is they don't have like RBI Baseball pop up there. They have Tecmo Bowl, but where's RC Pro-Am? Where's, you know, they have Double Dragon, but yet they're missing a lot of other like classic games. They're putting games I've never even heard of that I don't know who likes, but I don't know. It was games we never played when we were kids. I want RC Pro-Am, damn it, on the old
school. I loved RC Pro-Am. Yeah.
Right? That's probably I'll go to my grave saying that's my most favorite racing game because I'm not a big racing game guy.
That's fair. Yeah.
That was fun. Little remote control cars that shot missiles. I mean, what more do you need?
How about any of the baseball games that you liked in the past?
RBI Baseball original was always fun, but my favorite of the Nintendo baseball games will always be Baseball Stars. Yeah, because Baseball Stars was the first one where you could make your own team. It was like you could create your friends, or you could create all these things, and you could, you know, go through and or even make I remember some of my friends, we made major league teams, and we would play against each other. Plus, you had the Legends team that only had first names like Pete Lou. Or Ty, right?
Didn't they have the lovely ladies also?
They had the lovely ladies.
Right.
They also had the ghosts team. Remember that? The ghouls or whatever the hell they were. That was the weirdest part. Like, the randomness of those games was unbelievable. But I Baseball Stars to me was my favorite. Was that your favorite also?
Yeah, I would say so.
I thought the gameplay was good too.
But Tecmo Bowl would have been my all-time favorite. That would have been.
I think the gameplay in Baseball Stars was way ahead of itself. And then the next time I remember liking a baseball game that much was when EA Sports was very heavy into baseball and they did the Triple Play series. We played Triple Play 99. Me and my buddy Kurt, we played that game till it broke practically. It was crazy. It was such a fun game. And that was, again, you could start to reorder the league and draft teams, and you could really almost like fantasy baseball it up. But then EA kind of got out of the baseball market after a long time. I think they was MVP baseball might have been the last EA one they did. And then after that, they got out of that business, and ever since, it's been kind of a bummer. But I know MLB The Show seems to be the one everybody loves now. Haven't gotten to that one. Have you played that at all?
No, I have not.
I know Paul Spohr is a professional. Yeah. He actually gets paid money.
He streams every night, right?
Streams, and people actually, somehow he makes money playing video games on Twitch. I don't know how this happens.
That's crazy. I know that it happens.
I think I can make money playing Animal Crossing. I think some of my reactions are worth it. I think if that's all it is, it's about funny reactions. I'll give you funny reactions while I play video games for sure.
Yeah.
You know, what do you think is going to happen when we're older? Not old, but older. You know, the generation that, you know, is older in their 80s and 90s, there's still people at the, you know, some of the rest areas and homes and things, they like to play bingo. And that's like, we're never going to do that.
What are we
going
to be doing?
I imagine we're playing vintage video games. I imagine there's a foosball table there. Like, right? We're not playing bingo, you and me.
I would say we probably have an N64 there or a PlayStation. Yeah. Sega Genesis.
I'm going to be in my room playing Metal Gear forever. That's what I'm going to knock on my door and just slide the tray under the door. Just open the door, slide the tray in. I'm playing Metal Gear. Leave me alone. That's probably where I'm going to be.
We won't have trays where we're going, Joe. Trays? Who needs trays?
Who needs trays? Just virtual meals. Everything's going to be in pill form, right? That's all we need.
That's what I hear. All right, that'll do it for the first hour of our show. Coming up, we're going to get into the Tennessee Titans win total, Jacksonville Jaguars. No, they are not playing against each other this year in the NFL. That's really good news for all of us. I know we love that color rush on Thursday night between Tennessee and Jacksonville, but they finally eliminated the worst possible game. I would watch the college football game every Thursday night when they aired that game. Thankfully, that is over, but we got to take a quick break. We'll have that. We'll also have some thoughts on what the baseball landscape could look like as far as the designated hitter and the reserve list coming up later in the show. You're watching Fantasy Sports Today on Sports Grid. Don't go away. We're back in just 2 minutes.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday.
Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.